Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know there's been a new schedule put in place here at AnCast. You may have noticed we've taken a lot of hiatuses, more than 1 week off, you know, and that's usually due to scheduling problems where we don't have an interview guest for the week, so we try and come up with something else to do, or, you know, et cetera and so on. And, you know, the show's going on 5 years, and we sort of needed a new schedule that we can kind of stick to more. Consistently, I guess, is what we're going for here. So here's the new schedule. There will now be 3 episodes a month, so you can count on 3 episodes a month. There's going to be 1 week off, which has just sort of become a little necessary as the show goes on. And there will be 3 different kinds of shows every month. So one episode will be our standard interview segment, where we have, you know, Funimation or Viz or... Sean Kleckner from Right Stuff, our usual interview segment, hopefully new faces you haven't heard from before. Then we'll also have a Twitter show where we just take questions from Twitter, or we do a live show with our chat room. And then the third kind, which is what you're actually about to hear, every month we're going to have one episode that focuses on a show. It's just a panel discussion about one series. Right now, we're going to do 2 different kinds of these, one being either revisiting a hit from the past that we've sort of forgotten about or don't have a strong memory of. We'll do an episode after a rewatch. Or we will tackle a hit show that we haven't seen before. So, something like the first one scheduled for that will be Clannad, which I've never seen, and the co-host who will be part of those episodes... will be Hope Chapman, and so we'll both pick something we haven't seen. We will invite a guest on to talk about that show, and you know, we did these for like Watamote and Kill la Kill, and so we're just going to turn that into a once a month thing where there's just an episode that is just about one show, and it will involve rewatching. So it's not going to be like I remember or I barely recollect or anything like that. This will be based on a fresh viewing of the show. So. Those are the 3 kinds of episodes you can expect moving forward. And, you know, we're not boxing ourselves in here. We got space and room for exploration and experimenting. And whatever we want to do, we'll still do it. But moving forward, there will be 3 episodes a month, and you will get those episodes on Friday. So hopefully, you know, this will lead to a more, let's say, even distribution of episodes throughout the month. And we'll be able to stick to it a little bit more closely without having to scramble every, you know, 4 times a month trying to find an interview guest, that kind of thing. So I also wanted to put out a call. If you listen to the show, if you enjoy it, if you have suggestions for what you'd like to see, suggestions for episodes that you would, you know, shows where you'd like us to cover it for, you know, the episodes where we're just talking about one show, any suggestions you might have for the podcast, send them in. Zach@AnimeNewsNetwork.com is my email address. I would love to hear from some of you guys. We get feedback on Twitter and in the forums and stuff, but this podcast goes out to a lot of folks through iTunes, most of which we never hear from. So we would like to hear from you. Also, if you have questions, we will we'll do mailbag segments on the show. So, you know, we would like to start hearing from you. So please, more so than we normally do. Obviously, we get some feedback, but... if you're out there listening, send us an email. We'd like to hear from you. Anyway, without further ado, let's get to this week's episode. Okay, and we are back. Our show this week, we had a little first segment there. But our show this week is the first in a series that we're going to be doing where we focus on one show, either a hit show from the past that we're revisiting, or a hit show from the past that we never watched in the first place. And the topic of our first discussion in this series, which will be once a month going on out, is the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. And joining me for this is Hope Chapman.
Hey there, everybody.
And very happy to have her on the show. Our special guest is Sarah Pocock. She's an animator at Cartoon Network. You've seen her work in her animated work in Community and 22 Jump Street. Geez, you've seen it all over the place. She worked on Cosmos, the new one, obviously not the old one.
She's an immortal, you see.
Yeah, video games, like a bunch of stuff for WayForward, like DuckTales and a lot of stuff like that. Shantae, that series. Anyway, a million credits. Sarah, thank you for coming on the show to talk about Haruhi Suzumiya, of all the things we could have you on to talk about.
I'm happy to be here. I have a lot to say.
I hope so. So we picked this one kind of maybe a little bit out of a hat, but it's relevant, I think, because there's a spinoff coming. There's another Haruhi spinoff coming. I think this year or next? No, obviously not this year. Next year, I think. And I realized I had never finished the show, so I never watched season two, most of season one, or the film. And, you know, so I thought this would be a good one to start on, especially because it was a juggernaut back in the day, back in, like, 2006 when it premiered. This was a huge, huge show that, for the last, I would say, 5 years, feels largely forgotten. People just don't really talk about it anymore. You don't see merchandise, revivals. There's not a lot new happening with the franchise.
Nobody's clogging the convention hallways doing the dance anymore.
Yeah, there's no more spontaneous Hari Hari Yukai dancing. but to start here, I kind of wanted to get your initial exposure to and experience with the show. And Hope, why don't we start with you on that?
Well, I did not see... I was not part of the Haruhi craze. I saw the show when it came out on DVD in the States. So I don't remember if that was 2007 or 2008, but it was...
It was too late, is what it was.
No, you know, it was still... people were still talking about the show at that point. When it came out in English from Bandai, people were still talking about the show, so it wasn't gone yet. And, my initial exposure to it was just through the home release, and I saw the first season, thought it was pretty okay, and then I didn't see the second season or the movie until, like, way later. But I wasn't really part of the big fandom craze. I was aware of it, I got the memes and stuff, but I wasn't, like, part of the fandom when it was happening, so...
So sort of after the fact you watched it all?
Yeah, after the fact I watched it all, but it wasn't, like... extinct like it is now. I mean, it's not extinct now, but it's nobody talks about it. At the time when I watched it, there were still people like putting videos of the dance up. It was still memed. It was still heavily cosplayed. Like, it wasn't advanced
it was
anymore.
Thing.
It was still a thing.
Yeah.
So,
Sarah, what about you?
I watched the fan subs when they were coming out, but I wasn't really part of that whole like feeding frenzy with the people who watched it and immediately became super obsessed with it and were. Lauding it as like the greatest show ever, and it's doing so many cool, unique things. Like similar to Hope, I was watching it and just getting. I was enjoying it, you know. I was enjoying myself, but I wasn't really part of that, you know, that super super intense fan reaction.
Right.
And again, the second, like Hope, the second season and movie I saw much later, like. After they came out on Blu-ray in the States, or DVD and Blu-ray in the States. I didn't watch those when they were brand new.
Right. Okay. So basically, you know, you watched along with the first season on the fan subs, kind of lost track of it for a little while.
Exactly.
And then came back
yeah.
to it later. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. My experience with it was I watched the pilot as part of a season preview guide. I believe it was fall 2006 or spring 2006.
Spring, yeah.
Spring 2006. So I had pretty much just returned to ANN after working at Anime Insider, and that show was hot shit before it came out, super hot shit while it was on the air, and I really didn't watch much of it. I watched, like, the first couple and said, this seems neat, I'll wait for the DVDs. And then just, I guess, I had a sort of a false memory of having watched more of this show than I did. Because while I was rewatching it, or watching it for the first time mostly, I had really only seen maybe 3 episodes of this thing. So my experience with the show now is watching it in chronological order, which is important to point out, not the broadcast order.
A mistake indeed.
Yeah, I agree with Hope.
All of it, yeah, well, nobody knows that more than me right now, so I watched it all in the span of about a week, in this last week. Also kind of a mistake. That's sort of my experience with it. I never really got into it. I understood it was a big phenomenon. I tried to build a lot of features and hire writers who were into it to write about it and that kind of thing. But personally, I wasn't all that invested in it. It was a lot of people saying that it was this brilliant send-up satire mockery of anime tropes and cliches, which I don't find it to be that at all.
I didn't find it to be that back when I saw it in 2008. I was like, oh, really? That's cool. I want to see like an anime satire. And I saw it and I was like, oh, no, that's not what this is. It's a misconception. It's self-aware, but it's not a satire.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, being self-aware and being a satire and sort of turning tropes on his head are two different things, and I don't think that Haruhi does the latter thing at all. It points out its tropes and does running commentary, too much commentary, in my opinion, through the character of Kyon on the tropes. But it doesn't really subvert them in any way. It doesn't... Yeah, it's not satirical, in my point of view. So that was part of, like, when I was initially watching it, that was part of sort of my disconnect from, like, the huge fan response to it, where everyone was like, this is the most brilliant thing ever. And I'm like, it's nice, but it's not, you know, it's not that. It's not the greatest thing ever.
It's certainly not commentative. I would say it's smart in some ways, but it is not intending to be commentative in any way, really.
Right. Yeah, I didn't find it to be... It basically said, like, hey, we know we're using this stuff. Isn't that great? and you're kind of either okay with that or you aren't. But just to sort of get the premise of the show out of the way for people who don't know...
Yeah, somehow don't know.
The premise of the show is that a precocious high school girl... turns out to be God, who is sort of making the world in her own, unknowingly making the world in her own image, or at the behest of her own internal whims. So the characters in the show understand that everything that happens is a result of her wants and desires. She's not aware that she's doing this. Making her aware of it would somehow cause everything to collapse.
If she knew she was God, then she would really try to make the world in her own image instead of just taking the world as she interprets it and assuming some things can and can't happen.
Right.
So, you know.
And so along for the ride is sarcastic and kind of, I don't know, half-lidded in both appearance and personality. Kyon, who's sort of the love interest, also sort of the main character of the show.
He's like, what's the word, I guess? Enforcedly passive, like passive to a self-imprisoning degree. Masochistic, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. So joining them on this adventure is Asuhina, who is big-boobed time traveler. And then there's Nagato, who is Ayanami Rei, alien.
That's right. Yeah. No personality, sort of mysterious girl who masks all of her emotions. So you're always guessing what she's actually thinking.
Yeah, the show's requisite premium girl, I guess. and then there's the horrible character,
Itsuki.
Who is mostly there just to deliver. He's supposed to be an esper, which is somebody who has psychic powers. He is in the show largely to deliver giant dumps of bad light novel exposition and technobabble at once.
Because Mikuru is too bubble-headed to really convey exposition. Also, she has to keep everything secret because she knows the future. And Yuki Nagato is just the bare facts when you ask, because she's a robot and that she doesn't understand how to elucidate more than that. So all of the explaining the entire premise of the show falls on Itsuki, and oh boy, is that his job.
Ugh. Right. And
it's his only job. It doesn't leave much room for other personality in him.
Yeah.
His other personality is and I mean, I hope I'm not upsetting anybody by saying this, but it's true. Like, that's the joke. His other personality trait is gay panic joke. Is Kyon feels threatened by his presence because he's slightly effeminate, which, not okay. But yeah, terrible, terrible character in my opinion, but that's Isuki, so.
So, all of these characters are varying degrees of cutesy poo, anime girl. They're all very moe. The show, at one point, it was claimed was satirizing moe. It is not at all. Like, not even a little bit. It trades in those tropes, I would say, to a remarkably effective degree. Obviously, that's why this thing was sold so many DVDs and figures and was such a huge phenomenon. Mm-hmm. This show was sort of at the beginning of a big boom in moe content.
I would say responsible for it.
A lot of people are going to argue with you until the cows come home on that one.
I would say responsible for a specific strain of it, not for it on the whole, obviously, because it that strongly predates it. But I want to say it's responsible for a specific strain. But, yeah.
A specific strain of moe? What is
strain
that?
Strain of moe. So off the heels of Haruhi, you had a lot of shoujo game adaptations, and you had the spike, I guess, in light novel adaptations. There were light novel adaptations before Haruhi, but they really started going, and now there's a bunch of them, but they're of a different breed, but, like, a lot of the early ones were more like Haruhi. They had focus on, like, uppity female girl protagonist, and, you know, I think it spawned a lot of...
I don't know that I would use the word spawned. I would say it was definitely riding a wave of moe. Like, it was... I feel like it was even cresting at that point.
Right,
and that's maybe even part of the reason that the show's not talked about as much anymore, is because that the moe wave has sort of crashed by now. And, like, that whole... like, the popularity of the genre as a whole is sort of waning.
A little bit,
Maybe, I don't know.
A lot compared to 2008. Like, looking back at the year 2008 and what came out, it's like, whoa, goddamn. Like, all this stuff that just, like, vanished from the face of the earth afterward. Anyway.
I think that's true.
And then going back to, like, just the tropes themselves in the show, like, just the fact that you point the tropes out doesn't mean that this is satire at all. Like, more than anything, Kyon's character kind of reminds me of that terrible character from Lady in the Water, Bob Balaban's character.
Oh, God.
Like, he's like the film critic guy who, like, his job is to point out, like, how terrible the movie is.
And then gets horrible.
But it's like, actually, you're still in a shitty movie.
Yeah.
Like, just pointing it out doesn't change, like, the quality of the art itself.
Yeah, you know, it's I was going to get to this, but Kyon's character, upon watching this, you know, basically for the first time in the last week, none of it reads even kind of as satire to me at all. Like, not even an ounce does it read like it is saying much of anything about anime as a medium, as about the types of stories that are told in anime, about the familiar cliches of the moe genre. None of that. No commentary at all. To me, the lead character, Kyon, is largely there just as an audience self-insert. He has a little bit more attitude than your average self-insert. But he's the bedrock of the show's chief, what feels to me like the show's chief emotion, which is specifically men, or specifically kind of a male emotion, but obviously other people would feel this too. It is an excitement about doing things with girls at a middle school level, where just doing stuff with girls and being around them and having them push you around and take you places and, oh, I'm like her slave, that kind of attitude. When you don't know a lot about girls and they're still, like, really mysterious to you and you're just excited to be around them while they're doing things and they want to include you in their shit, that's like a middle school attitude towards women. This show seems like it is chiefly concerned with evoking that emotion.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's something I wanted to talk about, and I don't know how you wanted to structure this, like, if you wanted to only talk about the first season and then the rest of the stuff afterward.
Well, I kind
of
want to keep it to the first season here, just at the...
Okay, well, in that case, as I was watching the first season, I totally agreed with you, and I felt like, for a show that was essentially, like, it's supposed to be essentially a love story. It's about, like, a deity falling in love and how that affects... the way she changes the world around her.
Right.
And sort of the emotional truth of the show rang really hollow to me, because like so much of it was through Kyon's gaze and his attitude, which was very disconnected and very cynical. Yeah. You know, and because we're supposed to be experiencing the show through him, like, it just didn't ring true to me. Exactly. And that's what I thought, like, the greatest flaw of the first season of the show was.
Well, okay. Well, here's that brings to mind a question that I don't think the show answers. What does Haruhi see in him? What? Why are they in love?
I actually came around on Haruhi, like, when the second season of the movie came out. So this is stuff we'll have to talk about later on in the podcast, because right. I do see, like, eventually there is tenderness there, and there is a connection there. But in the first season by itself, I, like, my answer would be, I have no idea. Like, right. they're interested in each other as a plot device, basically, is what it felt like to me.
I felt like I understood why Haruhi liked Kyon. I did understand that once they were already embroiled. Like, I got that completely, because he puts up 100% with her shit, and but isn't silent. He, like, voices his own opinions and says, but it doesn't matter what I want, does it? And she's like, yeah, it doesn't. So he allows her completely to be herself without saying, you're a stupid little girl and you're doing this to make yourself look interesting, which she is, and she eventually confesses that. But he doesn't call her out on that. He's nice enough to humor her, but he's not, like, bowing down before her or anything. And I think I understand completely why she would fall for a guy like that. My question is, why did she first pull him into her shit? Like, that's the real thing that baffles me, is what caused the initial interest. I get the growing on part.
Well, specifically, it's because he notices that she changes her hair depending on the day of the week and asks her questions about why she's weird.
Yeah.
No one else apparently ever asked her that, and so that is a one-way ticket to, like, Boner Town. Is, like, asking her, why are you so weird? Because no one else in the school does that. They just think she's weird. So right. It's, you know, it's pretty childish, like, in terms, you know, I guess they're supposed to be, like, first-year high schoolers, so whatever, but that's the impetus for her deciding to be interested in him, is that he asks questions about her.
I got the chemistry, yeah, so, I got the chemistry between them. I thought the romance, for what it was believable. It's, to me, the reason that it rings hollow isn't because the chemistry between them is not believable, it's because they, as characters, well, especially Haruhi as a character, feels like a construct for a specific, you know, she's so idealized, she's not really a person. It's really hard to write a story.
I agree with everything Hope is saying, and then I also felt like, as the way that the first season was broadcast, there was so much emphasis on sort of, like, the gimmicky nature of, like, switching up the chronology of the show, and then it felt more about the presentation than about the actual story, which bothered me and distracted me, from what I was supposed to be enjoying.
I feel like that's basically, like, the raison d'etre of Haruhi Suzumiya as a work. Like, that continues throughout the whole thing. It is a story that's built on gimmick of itself. Usually the point of an episode or the point of an arc of episodes, and I understand this is the same case with the novels as well for people that have read them, that told me this, the point is usually the Shaggy Dog story. Like, the point is just the execution of an extremely simple idea. It's like, the joke is that it takes a long time to get there, or the joke is that it's done in this weird way, like Endless Eight. That's the point. And, like, the point is the gimmick, and it's, like, in full embrace and embellishment of the gimmick of it in and of itself rather than substance, which some people love, but, like, I, you know, that's the conceit, and it's like, oh man, it requires a lot of padding, basically, if that's your thing.
I agree with all of that. Like, the show's pretty, I found it to be very troubled, and okay, so just to get this out of the way, because for me this is going to get really weird talking about season one and season two, because they were all mixed together when I watched it. In my estimation, when you watch the show in chronological order, you don't need to actually watch anything after episode 5.
Is that the one where, like, she's about to recreate the world and he stops her?
And then they kiss, yeah. That's
okay.
It. You really don't need to know. Everything after that is, it's fluff. It is there so you can spend time with these largely one-dimensional characters kind of doing the same stuff over and over again in different environments. Like, they're making that movie, and you don't really learn anything new about any of the characters. There's some sci-fi weirdness in there a little bit, but mostly they're just fucking around.
I mean, you do. Here's the thing. So you do learn more about those characters after episode 5, not in a way that completes an arc in any way.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, you learn more about Yuki, you learn more about Kyoni, you definitely learn more about Haruhi in the future episodes, but...
There's no development, that's for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't come in... Itsuki...
Are we still talking just the TV series itself, not the movie?
We're not getting to the movie yet. We're still on season 1, but we can kind of transition into season 2 here.
But yeah, as far as saying something definitive about them as characters in a way that, like, has a message and a point and changes them, it stops at episode 5. After that, you learn more, but...
It's sort of filling in the margins. It's not...
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you anything you need to know to understand the story or the characters at all. And the characters
Also not much growth there in terms of... Like, emotionally, there's not much growth there after episode 5.
And the reason for that is episode 5 is really episode 13 or what? It's the end.
Yes.
Really.
Supposed to, and emotionally, and story-wise and emotionally, that is the end. That's the end of the show. There's only about 5 episodes worth of real story to it. And after that, I found myself really bored. I started getting super frustrated. Because I'm sitting here watching them fuck around at a baseball game. They're fucking around making a movie. And they're fucking around in the club room for the millionth time. And that's it for the rest of that show, you know, except for Endless Eight, which is its whole own thing. But yeah, so, like, my perception of the divide between the two seasons. But at the end of the first season, did you find yourself feeling satisfied? Like, what was your takeaway? And I guess, Sarah, that's a question for you.
I remember, it's so long ago. It's so my initial reaction to season 1 now without thinking about how it's colored by the work that came after it.
Yeah.
But I feel like I was sort of surprised that the climax of the first season, as it was broadcast, and that the season ended with a kiss, it sort of came out of left field for me because I hadn't felt any chemistry between those two characters at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't ring true to me. Like, I remember feeling, like, as a viewer, sort of, it's a good episode, and I felt satisfied by it, but also sort of, like, befuddled a little, like, I didn't really see that coming, and I'm not sure what I think about this.
Is that just because you didn't, like we were saying, really not much romantic chemistry between the leads at all?
Yeah, exactly.
So if this is turning into a, only my love can stop you from destroying yourself or whatever. I don't understand, like, when they fell in love, I guess.
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's exactly what I thought, yeah.
It's a real kindergarten kind of romance, quote-unquote romance.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I thought that was the point. Their ending is not a culmination of love. It is a initial discovering of it. It's... For Haruhi, is a discovering of it, which is why she wears her hair in a ponytail for a couple days after that, before going back to being normal. But, like, so for Haruhi, the kiss is, I should keep that to myself. For Kyoen, it's just, this is a thing of convenience, let me see if this works. I think he's well aware how he feels about Haruhi, but his actual reason for kissing her was just, I don't really want to die today, so let's see if
it works. It was a self-preservation kiss.
It was, yeah. And So, I mean, so, yeah, theirs is not a great love story. It is a, like, first realization of, oh, you know what, I think I like having this person.
That's true. It feels like the beginning of a love story.
Yeah. It's I should hate this person, because they do. Like, they're at each other's throats all the time. It's a Taming of the Shrew kind of a situation, where they seemingly hate each other, and yet, you know, so that's, I guess, the fallout. That's the chemistry, is they don't really hate each other, and they just now figure that out, and the end. But, you know.
Okay, so that, I mean, was that your basic walk away from the first season? Like,
yeah,
that
and
was okay?
And I ended with it satisfied. I was like, oh, that's not really what it was hyped up to be, but I enjoyed the act of watching it, and it helped that I watched it in broadcast order and had not had it spoiled for me. I actually didn't know the whole God thing, so if you watch it in broadcast order and you are not told Haruhi is God, you are confused, and it's actually more entertaining because you're confused if you like that sort of thing. Some people hate it, but I liked it, and ending with the Rain episode where he just sort of sits in the club room all day and everybody gradually leaves except for Haruhi, who comes back for him at the end. And then going right from that into the end with the kiss, it worked emotionally. It doesn't really work emotionally if you put it back in chronological order, but then again, hey, that means it's a gimmick that if you don't have that gimmick, the story falls apart, so what does that say? You know?
Exactly. Yeah, it's sort of praise and criticism at the same time, where the order they chose to broadcast the first season in created a better story arc than if you just watch it chronologically. Yeah. Or like the way the books were written or the way it's supposed to be seen or whatever. Yeah. So you have a better story arc, but what does that say about the rest of the season, you know? Like, if it's a story that essentially ends in 5 episodes and the rest is sort of like fluff and just watching them do stuff and not really exploring, you know, really deep character issues. I mean, it's a clever way to solve an inherent flaw in your source material.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then if you put the pieces in order, it kind of falls apart. That's interesting. And it's interesting to me because chronological order was pushed for a really long time. It's like, oh, this is the way to watch this.
Was it?
Or if you really want to see like the way this is supposed to go.
I completely disagree. I've never watched the first season out of broadcast order. I always watch it in broadcast order.
I never heard that argued by fans. I don't know. I don't know where you heard that argued. Well,
I heard it. I must have heard it either in some context years ago, and it stuck with me as like you should. This is why I watched it that way.
Right.
Otherwise, I would not have watched it that way.
No,
but people were like, "No, you should watch it."
So like fans are so fucking adamant about broadcast order. Like they exaggerate how important it is. I think the show is really hard to watch if you watch it in chronological order. But they emphasize they're like, oh, it's
torture.
They're like, oh, the only way to see it is broadcast order. And I'm like, I kind of have to agree with that. It kind of is the only, you know, the only way to see it is without even knowing what the premise is. And so if you had that spoiled for you, it's kind of hard because, yeah, it's just most of the show is gimmick. Most of the show is riding high on the weirdness of its execution for style's sake. So, yeah.
Yeah, so moving on to the second season, the infamous second season of this show, which is 12 episodes long, 13?
I think 14.
14. 8 of which are the Endless Eight, which is a sort of a metaphor. It's a microcosm of the show itself, because it's a fun premise with extremely troubled execution.
I loved the Endless Eight episodes.
Great. Okay.
I love them. And I know I am in a very, very tiny minority here, but I think it is just the most crazy thing I've ever seen for like a commercial work. And I love it so much. I can't overstate how much I love Endless Eight.
Okay. All right. Well, is it just sort of the ballsiness of it, or?
It's the ballsiness of it, and also because I wasn't watching those episodes as they came out, like, I can understand, like, the very vehement fan reaction.
Yeah.
Because it was coming out during the summer when it was airing, so the fans were also experiencing an endless summer where they just kept repeating over and over and over again. But this is where, like, gimmick sort of enhances story for me, because it works so well. Just that sinking feeling of watching the beginning of every episode and it ends and he doesn't fix the loop and you know you're going to have to sit and watch them do the same shit again for another week. And it feels hopeless. And it does make you feel, I'm not arguing that it's not frustrating and it's not boring to watch them do the same stuff over and over and over again for 8 episodes. It is. And that's why I think it works. Like, that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, sure. And that lasted 2 solid months. Like, that is 2 months worth of programming.
Well, here's the thing. So I would be fine with Endless Eight if the airing of it didn't last longer than the time period in which they repeat, but it does.
That's true.
And it's like, wait a minute. Like, to me, I don't admire, but I am glad that Endless Eight exists just because it's so fucking funny that it exists. However, I can't actually me personally, I can't condone the experience. I can't say it's a brilliant experience. I just think it's a really funny bit of history. Like, here's a little bit of really dumb anime history for you. But, like, I think it would be brilliant if it was 4 episodes long. But because it would be about the length of time that the loop happens, it would be just as emotionally effective. You could have all the different shades of, like, the 5 stages of grief that everybody sort of goes through. But it would be, like, a not wasteful amount of, like, if it was 4, I think that would be perfect. But there's literally, here's how gimmicky Haruhi is. There's literally no reason for it to be 8 episodes long, except that the number 8 turns sideways as an infinity sign, and that's why. That's the entire reason why, but it would work so much better as 4, and it's like, god damn it.
And I guess for me, there's an extra layer of fascination from looking at it from a production standpoint.
Right.
Because each episode is completely laid out differently. It's all different angles, all different outfits. It's the same lines and the same actions and the same scenes, but the layout's totally different. The animation's all totally different.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had been working at the studio as they were doing those episodes, they seemed like a really fun string of episodes to work on and to animate. Like, to just take this sort of banal summer, you know, just kids dicking around, and then animating it all these different ways. Like, it's fascinating. I don't know if it's great TV, but it's a fascinating experiment, and I really respect it, and that's why I love it so much.
It would have been great to me if they had animated it completely. What they really do is the characters are all the same, and it's just that they are sitting in different chairs, and they have different outfits on, and there's different camera angles, like you said. But I would have truly respected and said, yeah, okay, awesome, if it was like, this week it's a cubist like episode of Haruhi Suzumiya, or this week it's like, my brain just went blank.
It's low poly CG this week, you know.
Right, something. Like, and
yeah.
Yeah, or Masaki Yuasa. That's what I was going to say. This week
Masaki Yuasa. And I've heard this argument from other people, too. Like, it would have been... And I agree with this to a certain extent, that it would have been a better use of everyone's time if they had actually explored more visual styles through the run.
It would have killed the tone of despair that they're trying to evoke.
Exactly, yeah, but... exactly. Like, the fact that it's...
Yeah, if they did, like, a Space Dandy animator showcase, artist showcase type thing with it, I think that would have...
It kills the point. It kills the point of the whole run.
It ruins the point, but if you're going to have 8 of them... I would have said kept the point with 4. If you're going straight to 8, just go crazy. Like, I did. It was shortly after that was dubbed. Like, it was dubbed, but it hadn't been released yet. I was doing an interview with Johnny Young Bosch, who, bless his heart, had to play Itsuki, so he had to say, like, all that heavy technobabble dialogue. And I asked him, I said, for Endless 8, did you just have to redo that monologue about we're stuck in an endless time loop and here's the science? Did you have to do that 8 times? And he said, yep. And I said, how was that? And he said, we were so frustrated. He said, we thought about asking the Japanese licensors, do you think we could maybe in the dub do, like, episodes where everybody swaps characters and it's never commented on or anything, but, like, I'm playing Mikuru and Stephanie Shea is playing my character, and do you think we could do that? And it didn't go through, but he said it was so frustrating that we just sort of wished maybe they would let us do that, because it'd be something. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I do respect what they were trying to go for. The act of watching it is not pleasant. I do appreciate... I think you could probably take select episodes out of that and use it in a class as illustrative of, here's how context changes depending on where you put the camera. You know,
right.
Stuff like that. Which is... That's useful for a low-level film class or something, like filmmaking class, something like that.
Yeah, I remember one of the episodes, I forget which one, because they all run together so much, but, like, in one of them, the contrast was cranked up for a lot of it, and a lot of it was backlit, like, just dark, dark faces, dark shadows, and then sort of that that rim light around everybody. I watched second season over the weekend to sort of catch up or, like, refresh myself, and I thought I was going to skip most of Endless Eight. I thought I was going to just watch one or two episodes and then skip to the finale of that arc, but I ended up watching all of it because I was so interested in seeing how the details and the layouts and the lighting and everything and the direction changed from one episode to the next.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine, like, for someone in your position, that's the really interesting part about that. And, you know, speculating on what it must have been like to work on something like that. Because surely it's probably not ever going to happen again.
Yeah.
In animation.
I remember the third one is the one that, like... the third one is where I was like, oh, yeah, there's value in this concept, definitely. Because that's the haunted pool. That's where everything is just... is like you said, like, the contrast is weird and it's a little more backlit or whatever. But it seems like after a while, like, 5, 6, 7, they just... It's just a variation on outfits. Like, there's not a significant change in tone. It doesn't feel like you're taking steps down in the depression scale. They're literally just repeating themselves. And again, that's why I was like, I would really love this and love how frustrated it makes people feel if it was 4 episodes. But I don't know. I can't justify the 8. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, it's neat that it exists. But it is, I think, in terms of, like, oh, I gotta watch, you know, this is considered, you know, canon in terms of the, you know, pantheon of anime shows that everyone needs to watch if they're getting into this stuff. I think Endless Eight kind of creates this big speed bump that you have to either be cool with it, and if you're not, it's gonna kill your interest in that show, like, pretty quick. So I have to ask, because I didn't watch it in broadcast order, where does season 2 end?
The end of the Sigh, like the end of...
The Sigh of, yeah, the Sigh of Haruhi
Suzumiya. So when they make the movie, and so the first episode of season 1, or the 00 episode of season 1 is supposed to really be the last episode of the whole thing?
Right, so season 2 ends with, it's Endless Eight, and then it's all the movie making stuff, which is like, I think, 5 or 6 episodes, and then it's over.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. So what was ultimately, like, for season 2, Endless Eight, kind of aside, from a story and character standpoint, where were you at the, like, where were you emotionally at the end of the second season, Sarah?
Sort of the same place where I was with season 1. I felt like all of the interactions were very surfacey. There was a little bit of, you could see some tenderness growing in Kyon. There were shots in Endless Eight where he was sort of delighting in Haruhi's delight at getting the frog suit, and like little moments where you could see him sort of like his feelings for her growing and like tenderness growing. But yeah, and like the bamboo leaf rhapsody episode where he goes back and helps the middle school version of her do the crazy alien writing or whatever. Mm-hmm. But again, it was very similar to my reaction to season 1, which was very high on the gimmick factor, obviously, and like kind of clever, but not really engaging emotionally for me.
Yeah, that is where this show largely fell down for me. After watching those first 5 and then the rest of it, mostly I wanted the characters to do some kind of changing or growing, and it never happens. Well, it does happen eventually, but, you know, we'll get to that. But what I said at the end of season 2, and the movie I feel is also like this, like I said, we'll get to the film. It is an ocean of runtime with little tiny islands of story in it. But mostly you're just adrift. You're just adrift watching these characters fuck around. And I started getting... I would say that I actually sort of started actively hating watching the show because nothing was happening. And I'm like, I am so tired of looking at these high school backgrounds. I am sick to death of looking at these characters. This show is driving me nuts. Eventually, I kind of came out of that towards the end. And in chronological order, the movie-making stuff is all at the end. And it ends with the episode where she comes back for him in the rain. That's where the show ends, in chronological order. And... at the end, I was kind of coming around, and I'm like, well, I guess this wasn't that bad. But in the middle there, in the movie-making stuff, oh, man, I had it. Like, I'm like, this is going nowhere. I don't like these characters enough to spend all this time watching them screw around. Like, you're supposed to just revel in and delight in the characters interacting with each other in the exact same way they have been for 20-some episodes over and over and over again. And I don't care really about any of the characters in the show. Like, I wasn't emotionally invested in it. it was interesting, I guess, but I wasn't like rooting for anyone. I didn't enjoy, like, particularly enjoy it when someone was on screen. It was just like, well, there's Asahina again. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of hated Haruhi, but, you know, maybe we'll get to that.
I thought the movie-making stuff was valuable for just one thing, and it's frustrating, that one thing, because it's really just sort of a halfway step toward what it needed to be, but the movie-making stuff was valuable to me when I saw it, because it is the, like, it feels like the first real point at which Haruhi's abuse is not played for laughs, like, genuinely by the show.
Yeah, that was
not
good.
Played for laughs.
Yes.
And
yeah, when she and Kyon have that fight.
Yeah.
Like, that was a good moment.
Nothing is really done about it. Kyon kind of stops her, but not exactly, like, nothing's really, really done about it, but it is acknowledged as a destructive part of her personality. It was acknowledged way back in season one when she confessed, okay, I only do this because I want to be interesting before I die. Like, she made that very clear, so we know that, but it wasn't, like, addressed as a, hey, this is still actually destructive to her until then. Nothing's been done about it, but at least they acknowledged it, you know? And it was like, okay, that's valuable. I care that this happened. But again, it's like you said, it's like these little things that you expect to be in a story are stretched out to, like, hour 17 of a thing. You get basically this really nice nugget, but it's in hour 17 after 14 hours of nothing. And it's like, ugh, God.
Yeah, and, like, that one scene, yeah, okay, so I guess you need to watch those first 5 episodes and then maybe that scene before going to the film. But the scene doesn't have that much going, like, it doesn't really relate to much of what's happening in the film. So mm-hmm. if you just want all the character development, that's it. That's all of it.
Yeah.
That one episode. And so Haruhi's, it's played for laughs, like we talked about. It's supposed to be funny or sexy or both. But Haruhi's relentless sexual abuse of Asahina made me hate Haruhi a lot. And I didn't think it was funnier or anything.
Extremely problematic, I think, especially for, I don't know, I don't know if it's controversial to say, but, like, especially for a Western audience, like, and especially now with the current political discourse.
Yeah, sure, like, right. Things being what they are, yeah.
Things being what they are, it seems, it's problematic. It's extremely problematic, and it almost makes her seem, like, villainous.
Well, it just isn't funny. It's just not funny. Like, that's not, like, a hilarious joke. It just isn't, like,
it would be different if the joke wasn't, like, literally played for, I think, like, 60 seconds straight occasionally.
Yeah.
Where it's just her crying for 60 seconds, and while Yuki walks, all you see is Yuki walking around the room, putting away a book and going to read another book and not caring as Mikuru cries in the corner, and that's the joke. And it's like,
well, the thing that,
God damn it, that's not a funny joke.
The thing that kind of was nail in the coffin on the abuse part, that episode was good, and it was really important to make me not outright hate the show. Because up until then, Kyon sort of objects to it, but his inner monologue is constantly leering at and objectifying Asahina in the first place.
Oh, absolutely.
So he's constantly going, like, oh, I'd like to see her in that outfit. Like, he sounds like a creepy uncle when he comments on her. Yeah, I wish you would wear that more often. It's like, God, you know, I get it. Guys have gross inner monologues, but if you're going to do this constant physical abuse, sexual abuse on the main on Asahina, then to have the main character basically be complicit in it until he finally hits a breaking point, but he never stops with the, oh yeah, like, creepy, slobbery commentary. It's just that whole section of it doesn't work for me. I would imagine some people find it hilarious or whatever. Not me. I found it really distasteful. I was glad the show eventually addressed it.
Yeah.
But if it didn't, man, I would have walked away with a much more negative.
I mean, that's kind of an ages-old trope, too. Like, all that Rumiko Takahashi stuff was just basically all just that. Like, that was the humor of her work, of, like, Urusai Yatsura and Ranma 1/2. It was all that sort of, like, gross old guy and, like, lechy and, like, like, ogling girls and, like, oh, isn't hilarious that the wind blew up and I accidentally saw her panties and, like, just those kinds of jokes over and over and over and over again. Like, it's not like this is the only time it's been done in anime.
Well, there are moments in this that, like, you're talking about Rumiko Takahashi, where it's like sitcom level stuff. that stuff, you're right, there's a connection. But in this show specifically, it is about literal molestation. And, like, there's an episode where she, like, blackmails the computer club president by grabbing his hand and taking photos of him grabbing her. And it's like, you should be arrested for this. Like, I want to see the episode where she is lowered into a squad car.
I feel like, so I have a weird relationship with Haruhi Suzumiya in the same way that I have a weird relationship
She's not a real person, Hope.
The show, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. I have a weird relationship with that show in the same way that I have a weird relationship with, like, Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco songs and stuff like that, where I like them because they're terrible. I feel like I wouldn't like the most people who are really big fans of those things. Those are 13-year-old girls, so I guess I don't dislike them or anything. But, like, I wouldn't have much in common with people who genuinely like those. And yet I genuinely like them because I think they're awful, and I feel that way about Haruhi and Kyon. I like characters that I kind of despise, I guess, but only, like, in that specific way, where it's like, oh, this is an awful person, but they're an interesting awful person. And so that was... I don't hate Haruhi. I don't think the sexual harassment stuff is funny at all. It gets tiresome. It gets awful. But I don't hate seeing those scenes. I didn't hate Hyun's internal monologue of, oh, I'll just be complicit in this. Like, I like that he's so disgustingly passive on everything and just sits there and masochistically takes all this abuse and watches it heaped on others. Because I don't find either of those characters admirable. I have a thing where it's like, oh, they're weird. Like, these two people are strange and terrible, and I like watching strange, terrible characters be strange and terrible. So
it's sort of like watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and, like, they're all so horrible, you're watching a bunch of sociopaths.
Right, and that's the problem.
But, like, the difference is, like, that's actually kind of more clever and humorous than just doing the same molestation joke over and over and over again.
Well, right, well, the real problem is that the show's framing is that they're supposed to be likable, and that's the problem. But that's not why I enjoyed it. Like, it's tricky because the show's framing is not so emphatic of them being heroes. It's pretty neutral. It's just supposed to be you have fun watching them. It's not saying these are good people. It's saying you have fun watching. So if I am having fun watching because I think they are bad people, it doesn't really contrast too much with the tone, and it's fine. But it's a weird thing where it's like, I don't think I would have much in common with people that enjoy these characters' actions sincerely. But I'm definitely enjoying them just because they're so terrible. Like, both of these kids are so fucked. They're such fucked up kids that it's fun to watch.
No, I have, you know, movies like Blue Valentine and Revolutionary Road.
That's right, Zach, you have a history with this.
I like movies like that where you're just watching two awful people rip each other apart.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily prescribe that emotion or that response to this show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're awful enough. They're kind of... sort of generic.
They're dumb kids.
They're just dumb kids, and the show is framed as, "Hey, you want to hang out with Haruhi and pals?" And my response to that is no. But that is the way the show is framed.
It's hard right now. I'm sort of framing everything I'm saying as my reaction to the seasons before seeing the movie, and I have to say, after experiencing the movie, it's colored my experience of the show and, like, as the work of the work as a whole.
So, well, let's get to the film then. So the film came out just a few years ago. It is a whopping 2.5 hours long, a little longer than that, actually, I think. And it is a Kyoto Animation powerhouse of character animation that, well, it was divisive when it came out. I would say it was divisive. I knew people that absolutely loved every frame of it, and I knew people that could not stand it. So just to explain what happens in the film. So you come to the end of the TV show. They've made this film. Kyon and Haruhi are beginning a romance together. The world is sort of normal, or at least at peace. And in the film, Haruhi is gone. Where's Haruhi? Everyone stands around asking... Or at least Kyon does.
For an hour.
For literally an hour.
An hour before he goes, well, maybe she's here?
Until he finally starts finding clues that the world he knew has not disappeared. And in fact, it's there, but he has to fix this, basically, to get it back to his normal world. And the premise of the film is, we're not going to worry about spoilers because the point of this is to just talk about everything.
Right.
it turns out Yuki Nagato has emotions and is sick of this shit and wants to put a stop to it. And is not completely passive. Mm-hmm. And the end of the film is her basically admitting, I'm responsible for this because I just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah, her emotions are so tiny that it took, like, millions of loops of a single summer for her to go, I'm done, I can't handle this anymore.
So I guess, Sarah, you seem real big on the film. I want to know, you know, what'd you think of it and how exactly did it color your feelings about the TV show?
I really love the film a lot for the specific reason that I feel like it fills in the emotional core that was missing from all of the TV show. I feel like Kyun's distress and pain when he realizes that Haruhi isn't in his world anymore is actually really palpable and really touching. And it's really heartfelt in a way that hadn't existed in the TV show. And I saw, like, for the first time, I felt like I was watching somebody mourn the loss of a great love in their life, and just watching his journey. And I actually feel like the first hour of the film is really important, and I enjoy experiencing that loss and that despair with him and that fear that, like, not only is the world that he recognizes gone, but, like, the love of his life is gone as well. And that's really what's destroying him and making him feel so hopeless.
Yeah, and the aesthetically, the show is pushing, the world is gray and boring without this person in it. Not
exactly.
Only did you lose
yes.
the most important person in your life, but life sucks now as a result.
Exactly,
it's drab. Yeah.
Exactly. And I feel like for the first time, through his loss, I was feeling how much she meant to him before. Like, I understood the connection that they had that was now missing.
So, sort of retroactively kind of fixed the show for you.
A little bit, yeah, because I find the movie so touching. Like, there's so many moments of tenderness in the film for me. Like, when he finally finds her, he can't move his legs. He's so floored and so happy that he's seen her again. And then at the very end of the film, there's a beautiful little sequence where he wakes up in the hospital and she's asleep next to his bed and he reaches down and touches her face. Like, just really, really beautiful emotional moments that hadn't been part of that universe before that I thought created an emotional truth and were very, very touching. And I love them. I really love them. Like, and it affected me in a way that I didn't expect. Like, I teared up at parts during the film, and I'd never experienced that at any point in the show at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those are really good points. I think you sort of hit the highlight reel of what that movie does well. Mm-hmm. And I think you're correct that it gives the show an emotional context it didn't have before and lets you in to maybe understand these characters a little bit more, or at least know that they're feeling something.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas before, they just are sort of like cardboard, one-dimensional anime characters. And the movie kind of gives them a little bit of dimension. A bit, anyway. Mm-hmm. Enough, maybe.
Kyon is reacting sincerely to a situation, which is...
Exactly, like, yeah. And he's never really been sincere before.
No, even when the world is ending, he's like, well, I didn't have anything else going on anyway, so... You know, his self-preservation instincts eventually kick in, but that's not an emotion so much as it is, okay, I'll stop being smug for a second so I don't die, you know. This was different from that, very, very different.
Yeah. So, when did you see the film? You said it was shortly after watching the second season?
Yeah, it was. I think they were both out, and I just kind of watched them together-ish. Not all on the same day, certainly. But, like, yeah, I saw the film. I liked it a lot. On a revisit, I rewatched it with you because I was like, I remember this being my favorite part of Haruhi Suzumiya. I should probably, like, try to remind myself why. On a rewatch, I still like it, but I would like it at 90 minutes. Like, there's so much, and not specifically, not necessarily from the first hour, more like from the second hour when it's, like, gobbledygook time with Itsuki. Like, or with Mikuru, where he's like, oh, this is where I was John Smith. Okay, I gotta wait an hour in this park before I can go see her. Okay, now I'm gonna talk to Mikuru for a while, and we have to wait an hour before we can go this other way. That all could have been taken out.
Like, yeah, gosh, like the very technical time travel aspects could have been shortened a lot.
God. Yeah, the totally uninteresting light novel sci-fi bullshit that is hanging around in the background and almost never has any impact, meaningful impact on the story. Mm-hmm. Like, except for those first five episodes and occasionally in moments, that stuff doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's not the story of the show. All that bullshit about, well, I'm from the Time Traveling Bureau and my alien masters are upset because we're doing this and that. None of that has any meaningful impact, really, on the show itself, aside from giving them narrative tools that they can use, narrative sci-fi tools, Deus Ex Machina stuff, that they can use to make their emotional points. But it's clumsily handled. Like, you get so much exposition about that sci-fi gobbledygook, and it's not important for you to know. It is not at all.
I agree.
So, I mean, having just seen the film, first of all, I just, like, Kyo Annie animated the living shit out of that movie. Like, it is some really incredible character animation. I want to get your take on that in a minute, Sarah. But to me, this was 2.5 hours with little drops. Like, this show is so loath to give you character development. They make a 3-hour movie where you get tiny drops of character development. You get a little bit more emotional fleshing out with the two leads, and then most of the film is centered around how Yuki actually does feel things and actually is fed up with all this and does take steps to do something about her terrible situation. And it was also the only time when the show actually kind of commented on how miserable that life would be for all of them. Because before this, everyone's kind of like, ho-ho, but our crazy life, oh gosh, you know. But that would be fucking miserable if you're like a slave to the whims of a teenage girl who is going out of her way to do stuff just to seem like she's interesting. You are literally a slave to her whims. That would be misery. No one ever really says that except at the end of the film.
That was the most important part of the movie to me, was the very clear implication that as dreary as this world is, it is the world the movie never changes from Kyo's perspective. He is the sole perspective character throughout the whole thing. There's not a scene that he's not in it. And the world is dreary for him. But through his conversations with the other characters who aren't Haruhi, it's made very clear that the world would be better for everybody that's not him and Haruhi. Itsuki would be in a relationship with Haruhi rather than this third stringer who just sort of suffers and shares exposition with a bored guy who he has to compete with. So he's happy about that. Like, he said, one of the last things he says to Kyo before just giving up again is, "I envy you." And then buy for him, so things would be better for him. Meguru has, like, friendships and seems to be, like, in a slightly better way.
She's not being constantly molested or groped.
She's not constantly molested. She has healthy friendships with other girls. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that Yuki is just a normal human girl, and she's lonely. But so Yuki's life all by itself is not better without Haruhi in it, but it could be, because Kyon is given the very distinct... There's some distinct relationship lines being drawn between them, like almost romantic lines being drawn between him and Yuki as a what could be. If he wanted to, he could fully commit to, like, join the literature club and help her through her stuff and be her friend. Just obviously she just needs a friend, and they even, like, seem to imply he could be, like, a romantic interest for her, but he doesn't do that. Ultimately, he has a personal, like, brain confrontation with himself, where the smug version of himself that is totally above emotion and totally self-commentative, like, so much that it's shown in reflections of windows as, like, this is the version of you we've seen throughout the TV series, faces the head down on the desk, not moving emotional part of him, and forces him to confess that he is a big fat masochist who just wants Haruhi to hang on his every, like, basically wants to hang on Haruhi's every word and have her acknowledge him in all of her craziness, even if the world is worse for other people, and even if it's, you know, like,
he admits in the film that he's made a selfish decision. Like, he apologizes to, like, the alternate version of Yuki, like, I'm sorry, I know this is selfish, but...
Well, he should, really.
He should, yeah. It is a selfish decision, but he needs that relationship. Like, I honestly feel like he doesn't feel complete as a person without that dynamic he has with Haruhi in his life.
So the super self-aware smug, oh no, I hate this, this sucks, part of him actually turns on him and tells the emotional part of him to fess up. And I thought, okay, yeah, that is the strongest part of not just this movie, but this entire franchise, and a really important part of this character. I just wish this movie was like 90 minutes, because we don't need the sci-fi stuff.
Well, and there's it's very padded out, and the reason for that, I have been told, is that the point was to animate or show literally every line of the novel. Like, nothing is cut. Every scene is included. That's probably why it's so long. I mean, I would imagine with an editor, they would have gone in and said, okay, you don't need this, you don't need this, you don't need this. But they were trying to give the fans, like, the full experience, everything that's in this novel. You're going to get the whole thing top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, as though that's more important than making a more effective and entertaining film. But, you know, hey, this was fan culture. Like, they were trying to make those guys happy, and I assume they did, because I'm pretty sure the movie did very well. But I did want to talk a little bit about the animation in it, because one of the things about this show that I found myself dwelling on was that it was really, in a lot of moments in the TV show, I mean, it's famous for having the KyoAni animation style that people largely associate with high quality, you know, fluid character movement. You know, you don't see a lot of an anime, there's a lot of frames, you know, when they want to use them. The movie seems like it's, you know, from some world where anime has a lot of money to spend on character
anime. Like, there's a lot of animation on ones in the movie, which is really, really rare for animation anywhere.
But especially anime.
especially anime.
Yeah. But the thing that wound up frustrating me was that I felt this was all brilliant animation, character movement, in service of a very dull aesthetic. Like I said, I got tired of looking at these characters in these same backgrounds. Like, I appreciated the movie repainting those backgrounds so that they're much higher detail, they look much better, they're warmer, you get a much better sense of place from them. Like, they're just, the backgrounds in the film are much better than the ones in the TV show. But I just got tired of looking at these boring high school kids in these same couple of rooms, the same hallway, the same staircase, over and over and over and over and over again. So ultimately, like, I was like, well, it's really brilliant animation in service of this, what I felt was a pretty dull aesthetic. And, you know, Sarah, that's your line of work, so I'm curious, like, what your take on that is.
I would agree, like, from a design standpoint, like, I was never the biggest fan of the Haruhi character designs. They just feel, like you said earlier in this conversation, like, sort of cutesy moe, very traditional, just, like, cute girl anime high school sitcom style drawings,
yeah.
You know? I don't know that I got as bored as you did with the backgrounds and the location of the layouts and this. Oh my God. Blah, let me start this over again. Sure. Edit this out. I don't know that I got as bored as you did by the general layouts and like the high school stuff and the backgrounds of the film. But I did notice like there was a lot of care and detail in the character animation, and there were parts that were very impressive and not necessarily things you would think of right away as showy animation, like fight scenes or like really big expressive movement. Like just stuff like Haruhi writing on a whiteboard and like the subtle way that the board moves as she puts the marker on it. Or the way that she would, she was like spraying that stuff onto the windows, like stuff like that, like very simple character things that, because this movie apparently had such a great budget and so much time and care was put into every single shot, not just the action stuff, it created some very subtle and interesting character animation of just everyday actions, which I found fascinating to watch. Oh, as someone who does animation for a living.
Okay, great. Yeah, there was a scene, like, there were moments in that I was watching that movie, and he's, like, punching in a code on a security box on an apartment complex. And I'm like, man, they really animated the shit out of that. Like,
yeah.
All he's doing is just putting...
I'm not used to seeing that kind of detail in an anime film.
Yeah, so it's very impressive. It just, like, to me, it was like, man, imagine if this level of animation care and quality and work was put into something with an aesthetic that does not make my eyes fall asleep. Like,
yes.
That was my only, and it's a minor thing. It's just like, I found myself very bored with the aesthetic of that show. But, you know, that's also probably the result of watching it all in such a compressed amount of time.
Again, yeah, exactly. You saw like 10 hours of this thing altogether, like in a very short amount of time. Right. So I can see how that would, like, the style of it would get old quickly.
Yeah, well,
because it's not that interesting to look at. You know, the designs are very traditional, you know, sort of classic cute girl anime, big eyes, small mouth, small nose.
It did not occur to me until I, like, basically walked past occasionally as Zach was rewatching it, how much the club room from Haruhi Suzumiya had been burned into my brain. But it had. Like, I looked at that and I was like, oh man, like this setting, like this air, because so much of the show takes place in that club room, like it really had been like permanently etched. And it's not just a generic anime club room. It's like this club room specifically, where the computer is placed, where the bookshelf is, where the chalkboard is on the other side of the wall, burned into my brain. So they must spend a lot of time in there, because I only watched that show like twice.
They sure do. Oh, they sure do.
Yeah.
I got real tired of that club room. But, you know, that's probably, you know, and on one level you can also prescribe that to the general feeling the show was trying to get across, especially in the beginning, was that this is a boring, repetitive life. I sure wish it were more interesting. I hope a magical girlfriend shows up.
Yeah, magic pixie dream abuser.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, that's attributable to that, I think. To an extent, I don't think it's effective. Like, I think, like I said, my eyes got bored. But, yeah, no. So overall, I mean, at the end of this, you know, the emotional realization you came to, I thought it was too much for too little. I thought the movie was way too much. But again, it was also kind of a microcosm of the show. An ocean of runtime and little tiny islands of story and character development. Mm-hmm. To the point where you need to watch the film if you want to really get any kind of emotional takeaway from the show. But the movie has similar problems with pacing and structure that the show does. So, you know, it's necessary that you watch this film, but before going into it, if you're already not enjoying the show, I think the film isn't necessarily going to give you exactly what you want in terms of, quote-unquote, fixing the issues that the show actually has.
If nothing else, across two seasons in a movie, Haruhi Suzumiya is extremely consistent.
Yeah, that's
in,
true.
In the style and execution and tone, extremely consistent.
Yeah. At the end of it, though, I have to say, I'm very glad I watched it, if only, you know, if only just to see that animation in the film. But it's one of those things I'm glad I have a breadth of knowledge of it now, that it's fresh in my mind, that I've seen it, that when this new spinoff comes out, you know, I will know whether or not right away I'm interested in seeing that. Right now, the answer is no. I don't want to spend even another minute with these characters. And knowing how Haruhi Suzumiya is typically paced, mm-hmm. that will be 13 episodes and one thing will happen in it.
Right.
And that's it. And it'll be like, oh, it turns out Yuki can also feel happiness or something like that. Like, you know, that's it. So I'm not sure if I want to see more, but I'm very glad I watched the show. I think it is a fascinating premise with really troubled execution. I mean, it makes sense to me that it was really, really popular for a very short period of time and then it just flamed out.
Yeah.
That to me makes total sense. Like, that popularity arc makes sense watching the show now. And so I guess before we get to the Twitter questions, I guess your final takeaway from the whole thing, Sarah.
Sure. I guess since my experience of it was more spread out than yours, I wasn't taking it all in like a very compressed amount of time.
Right.
And especially since after the first time I saw the movie, I went back and rewatched the first season and the second season again. And I feel like I've sort of come around and I've come to, like, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of the show, but I have like a healthy appreciation of it. And it's something that I'll be happy to put on while I'm working. And it feels like not a close friend, but like an acquaintance who I'm happy to spend a couple of hours with, you know, every couple of months,
right,
just to check in with. So I have very warm feelings for the show. I also understand like how it was so incredibly popular when it was new and sort of fizzled out, because there are problems with it structurally. But overall, I'd say my takeaway is a probably more positive than yours.
I would say. And Hope?
For me, Haruhi Suzumiya is all about... It's one of those things... It's one of those... Gosh, it's a lot of anime that I put into a box of, like, if I can take this premise and, like, see it adapted another way, because I think that the premise is so strong, then I would. But the actual execution, my only attachments to Haruhi Suzumiya are the basic premise and the two lead characters. I do think they're really unique. I do think they're unique in anime for their very specific combination of weird, awful traits that aren't... I don't think they're loathable like this. I just think that they're interesting kind of crappy kids, I guess. And I really like watching those kind of crappy kids, so I don't really care about the other three characters. I feel like they're just stereotypes, and there's really not anything past that, and it's unfortunate, but yeah, I can't feel anything toward them. But I really do like Haruhi and Kyona, and I like watching them do things, but that's about it. So everything else I don't really care about in the show at all, but I liked those two lead characters. So, yeah, it's pretty much it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, if the show had more to chew on character-wise for that amount of show, I mean, it's 28 episodes and a 2.5-hour movie, I think I would have been a lot happier with it. I think I would have gotten into it, I would say, more than I did. All right, so we got some Twitter questions here. We'll get through these. Ashoka the Bear asks, since the Yuki Nagato spinoff is coming around soon, do you think more Haruhi material will be in the works, and would you consider watching? Well, like I said, I don't right now. No, who knows how I feel next year? Maybe I'm sure I'll at least give one or two episodes a try. But Sarah, I'm curious to know, like, if they make more Haruhi Suzumiya stuff. I mean, are you on board?
Yeah, I think I am. I think I'd be interested to watch it.
Does that depend, or is it like, you know, if it's more like main story stuff, but if it's like real spin-offy, like gimmicky, you know, one of the characters is a magical girl now, you know, stuff like that.
You know, that's a good question. I guess the last thing I saw from Haruhi was the movie, and I enjoyed it so much. Because I warmed up to Yuki so much as a character, I'm sort of primed right now to be receptive to that.
Oh, okay. All right. Hope, what about you? I mean, you're going to have to for preview guide and stuff. But...
Right, for preview guide. Yeah, for me, I'll stick with it if it's more of, like, the story material. Even if that means the padded out one nugget for the ocean of blah, like, content. For the story material, yeah, I'm invested enough that I'll look at it, and it's KyoAni, so it looks nice. Like, without it being KyoAni, it wouldn't be the same. But I like looking at their stuff, and I'm invested in that. If it really is just, like, comedy spinoff, then no. They already did that, I think. They did, like, a...
They were little short comedy ones.
They were little short things. Yeah. And those, I didn't care about those, except for the You Made Mikaru Cry meme, which is actually pretty, it's a pretty handy reaction link. If you ever need a reaction link for something appalling somebody said, then there's that. But, like, yeah, it has to be, like, actual story. It can't just be, like, a gag show thing.
Okay. Gabomatic, who writes for the site, asks, why do you think the show's reputation has lasted? Was it something special or just the right thing at the right time?
Has it lasted?
No, I think actually that's one of our sort of, that's sort of a base assumption that we're making, is that it really kind of hasn't. I remember taking photos in, like, 2009 in this Mandarake, which is a used anime and manga goods store in Shibuya in Tokyo, and they have, you know, it's located in this basically dusty attic, or basement. It's a basement, actually. It's a dusty basement. And in there, you'll find, like, unwanted Gendo figures that are marked at, like, $9 a piece. And there was a bunch of Haruhi merchandise down there in 2009, stacked in these dusty mountains in a corner. And it was clear at that point. And, like, you didn't see anything for it in, like, anime, or there was no, like, fresh, new Haruhi stuff, like... It seemed like certainly the Japanese fans had moved on, and definitely it has felt like that. Like, the movie came out, everybody got excited about that, and then that ebbed away, and, you know. So I wouldn't say that its reputation has necessarily lasted. It's still talked about in, like, what have been the big hit shows of the last 10 years, that is undeniably one of them. But that's kind of it.
Well, and also, there's a strange sense of, like, ownership about that show. Like, not just that, but a lot of KyoAni properties. Yeah. Like, just the way that the fans react to it, there's a very big sense of, like, oh, this is made for us. Like, it's a show that feels... Like, when people react to it, they use the word us a lot, like, for the fans.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that sense of ownership is what led to the backlash over Free.
I mean, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, man. Yeah.
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 Weepy Sweet Monty asks, does it still hold its ground as a pillar in American anime fandom? No. In fact, referencing the dance, the Haruhi dance, is like a throwback, like, retro, like, I remember that, like... VH1 I Love the 2000s thing to bring up. AngelX03 asks, favorite animated scene that stood out for you? Anyone have one?
Kyon's horrible realization nightmare where he's stuck at the subway and gets packed with stuffed animals and thrown out a window in the movie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tara?
Like, for me, I brought it up earlier, but it was just, like, really subtle character animation of, like, writing on a whiteboard. Like, little stuff like that is just, like, catnip to me. I love it.
I think you're right. I think the best, in terms of framing, in terms of camera placement, fucking, you know, it doesn't exist in animation, but blocking, so to speak, the scene where he sees her outside the school for the first time and he can't move, the facial expression, the animation on his body and stuff, it's very relatable. Like, that's all feels very real.
Yeah.
The way that was handled. I liked it a lot. Here's a good question. Bunny Bookends asks, would you classify Haruhi as a strong female character? Yes or no, and why? I hope you want to take that one first.
Sure. Well, by the definition of strong female character as role model, the answer is no. No, not a good role model. But by the definition that I... greatly prefer, which is strong female character as human being that exists and is female. Almost, but not quite. She's close. Like, she's close to a real person that would actually exist in that they do give her eventually a motivate. Like, basically, she's a manic pixie dream abuser is the best definition I can give it, which is like manic pixie dream girl, except for people that are a little masochistic. Like, and but then when they give her more besides that, and they give her flaws, it's closer to, like, this is a real person. So, strong female character as in a real developed person that happens to be a girl instead of just a stereotype meant to, you know, meant to fill in a space because somebody doesn't know how to write a girl. It's almost there, but she's just too much of a fantasy character, and there's just not enough depth there. But she's close, it's just not all the way, no.
What do you think, Sarah?
I would mostly agree with that, yeah. I would say, like, the way that Haruhi herself is written just as a character, it's almost unisex. Her actions and, like, her crazy antics could come from a character of either gender. But there's so much of, like, the male gaze fixated upon her, like, from Kyon's perspective and, like, the way Hope is talking about. She's this manic pixie dream girl. And that's, like, the whole point of the show is, like, deity in his life, like, this literal god who he falls in love with, and that's the reason he goes along with her antics. Like, that sort of kills the strength of the way she's written, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say that she's not unigender. I do think that the strong female character thing does. Some people say, okay, it's only a strong female character if you could change the gender and it wouldn't change anything. I've never agreed with that. I think that you can do that, but there are many strong female characters whose identity and actions are tied to their gender, and that's totally okay because that's a realistic expectation to have of some people. And I always thought Haruhi was extremely feminine in the way that she, like, interprets the world and behaves and uses her behavior to manipulate others. She's real feminine. Like, she's just a sort of gross, loud, noxious, pushy feminine, but she's, you know, there's certainly a girliness there. Like,
I think for me, the show dips too far, like, just by the very nature of it being, of it having this unmoving perspective from Kyon's point of view. And, like, the show frames her to use, like, garbage, sexist archetype word. She's a spitfire. Yeah, you gotta tame that horse. Exactly, like, that is the way she's framed.
Yeah.
For a lot of the time. And I think that sort of precludes it from being a quote-unquote strong female character. Like, I don't want to get into vocabulary words for any for all that shit, but I didn't particularly see her as some sort of exceptionally well-written female character. No. I didn't see that.
She's better. I would say she's better than her stereotype might dictate, I guess.
Yeah, sure. I think that's true. She's not just straight up obnoxious tsundere fantasy.
Yeah, she's not straight up fantasy girl. There is some genuine, like, fear and nuance. Yeah. As in, you should be afraid of her, and she has nuance.
So, I like this question. Ashley Storing asks, Endless 8 or Nadia Island episodes?
Ooh.
I would take Endless 8, I think.
I would take Endless 8 in a heartbeat.
At least it's more well-animated, like, than the...
Well, those Nadia... Oh, man, those episodes are bad. Okay. Ronan Willis asks, I've heard that Haruhi was big on fan subs, but not on DVD. Is this true, and if so, why? Has this happened with other shows? Okay, so you mentioned that, like, oh, they weren't too late with it. Actually, they were. This was a big controversy back when the show was coming out. I know what the sales numbers were for Haruhi. Obviously, I can't say them because there are people who still have jobs in places that, you know, shared those secrets with me, and I don't want to betray them. It did underperform. They did not move as many units as they wanted to. You saw evidence of that by the fact that those limited edition boxes, mm-hmm. still available for quite a while after they released them. That show underperformed big time for Bandai. Maybe not big time. It underperformed, and they really needed it to be a bigger hit.
Mm-hmm.
They waited too long. It took too long for those DVDs to come out. By the time the DVDs were coming out, people were already moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was bad timing.
Right.
Let's see. Last couple here. Gabmedic. Okay, this is a good one. What was the superior mid-2000s dance craze? Haru Haru Yukai, the Lucky Star theme, or Carmel Dancin'?
Haru Haru Yukai is more elaborate than the other two.
Sarah, do you have an opinion on this very important question?
I couldn't give less of a shit.
Sarah has the best answer.
We take the stupid ones, too, sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the Haru Haru Yukai is more representative of that time period as a whole. Like, if you were saying earlier, if you were doing, like, a throwback joke, like, I feel like the Haru Haru Yukai is the one you would go to.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
I mean, in terms of stuff that I find not, like, in terms of being annoying at conventions, Carmel Dancin' can just go fucking, just die in a hole somewhere. Like,
so much wiggling all over.
Just get nailed into a dumpster and be lit on fire or something. Like, I hated that shit. I'm glad it's gone for the most part. Okay. And lastly, from Buddy Cop Doug, he asks, did you think the show succeeded more as a sci-fi thriller or as a school sitcom?
I don't think it had any aspirations to be anything with the latter. I mean, like, it has all that other stuff sprinkled in there, but it's definitely not a science fiction show, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would say the science fiction elements were just there for, like, coloring and atmosphere. But it was definitely, it's a high school romance show. That's what it is.
Right. With a sci-fi flavor packet. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that actually wraps up our discussion of Haruhi Suzumiya. It's out there still. Funimation's re-releasing it on Blu-ray. If you have the means, get the film and check it out. I think if you're interested in it, it's worth watching. I'm not saying don't seek it out, but I would give it a recommendation if you're at all curious. It's a unique thing to see, I think. And I think it is important in the history of this particular period of anime. So with that, Sarah, thank you so much for stopping by and enlightening us. I appreciated that very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Sarah for dropping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us, leave us a little rating, review on iTunes, whatever I usually say at the end of these things. And we'll see y'all next week.